Welcome to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, here to start your week off on this Monday afternoon, this wonderful Monday afternoon. All right, we have a fantastic show planned for you today, a fearless show planned for you. The most fearless discussion of the day returns to this show. We're going to talk about Patriots kicker Justin Rohrwasser and the controversy enveloping him about his controversial tattoo. We'll get into that in about 40 minutes. But we're going to start the show where we love to start the show with the NFL draft. And we're going to head out to Phoenix and be joined by Seth Joyner, a former Philadelphia Eagle great. He lives out in Phoenix now. Yes. Seth, a friend of the program. Good to have him back. Let's talk about your Philadelphia Eagles, who made news on day two of the NFL draft on Friday by selecting Oklahoma quarterback and Alabama national championship quarterback, Jalen Hurts, in the second round. This despite having, you know, not long ago given Carson Wentz a new long-term contract. Carson Wentz, clearly their franchise quarterback. But in the second round, they go get Jalen Hurts, one of the Heisman finalists. It was an interesting pick that set off some controversy. And so we'll begin with, and Seth, you go first here. Do you think this is a move that indicates the Eagles have lost a little bit of confidence in Carson Wentz?
I really don't think so, even though I'm head-scratching a little bit at this pick. I really don't get it. I don't understand it. If you want to draft a Jalen Hurts, you can certainly wait to the third round, maybe the fourth round, and hope that he's there. But I really don't think when you give a guy $66.5 million guaranteed and an extension, $128 million over the next 4 to 5 years, that they're really worried about Jalen Hurts being a threat to Carson Wentz. But it does lead you to scratch your head a little bit as to why you would make this move in the second round with the 53rd overall pick.
For me, yes, they've lost some confidence in Carson Wentz. And it's not his ability, it's his reliability. The fact that you can't rely on Carson Wentz when it matters most. Philadelphia Eagles been in the playoffs last 3 years in terms of their success. Where was Carson Wentz in those situations? Didn't play in two of them. And the third one, he started and didn't finish. So now they're saying to Carson Wentz, who shouldn't feel slighted in this, because as you mentioned, Seth, you got a $128 million contract from the Philadelphia Eagles. That's the confidence in your ability. The confidence that we're losing in your reliability means it's time for us to ride with you, but put our seatbelt on. And that seatbelt is called Jalen Hurts. And that meant we had to go in the second round and get someone who's reliable, who's durable, and also knows how to play his role, whether a starter like he was at Alabama, Oklahoma, or even as a backup, still becoming a leader like he was at Alabama when he lost his job to Tua. So if I'm Carson Wentz, I just have to appreciate that the Philadelphia Eagles are still riding with you, but they're no dummy. It's time to put the seatbelt on, named Jalen Hurts.
Totally agree with Marcellus here. Listen, the formula for Philadelphia when they won the Super Bowl, they had a hell of a backup quarterback who came in and actually played and led them to that Super Bowl. They went all in on Carson Wentz, let Nick Foles walk down to Jacksonville, gave Carson Wentz a huge contract. And so to me, this, again, do they still believe in Carson Wentz? Absolutely. But have they lost a little of the confidence that he's the guy that can get you through 16 weeks and the postseason? I think without question. And so if they were 98% sure Carson Wentz was their franchise quarterback when they let Nick Foles walk, I think today with this move here with Jalen Hurts, they're at about 85%, which is still good, but they've lost some confidence in Carson Wentz, Seth. No question about it.
Well, this is why, you know, I don't feel that way. If you're worried about a backup quarterback for your off-injured quarterback, starting quarterback, franchise quarterback, then you don't go in the draft to get that guy, because that guy still has to be developed. He's got to learn a system. He's got to learn how life works in Philadelphia. All of these things he has to learn. If they aren't
confident. Took Lamar Jackson 10 years.
Hey, listen, Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes, they are the anomalies of the NFL. You don't see a whole lot of young quarterbacks come in the game like those guys. And what Andy Reid did and what Jim Harbaugh did.
Took Russell Wilson, 20 years to get it together?
Russell Wilson didn't play until his third or fourth season. He didn't become a starter until his third or fourth season. Okay? So now.
Russell Wilson? No, Seth.
Russell Wilson didn't come in the league as a starter?
Yes.
Listen.
Yeah, he did.
He beat out Matt Flynn, the guy that took a job in training camp.
He lost his job in training camp.
We're still talking about anomalies.
Yeah, we're gonna move on to the next topic.
I gotta make my point. If it's a confidence thing, then you go get a veteran and you bring that guy in. If Carson Wentz gets hurt this year, Jalen Hurts is not stepping in and taking his football team to the Super Bowl like a Nick Foles.
Yeah, he can't do what Lamar and Russell Wilson did.
Not happening.
All right. Let me ask you this, Seth. Maybe you'll be on better ground here. Should Carson Wentz be bothered by this move at all?
No, he's got 128 million reasons not to be bothered by it. And, you know, at the end of the day, every executive in the Philadelphia Eagle organization, their wagon is hitched to Carson Wentz. If Carson Wentz doesn't succeed, this is not going to bode well for Howie Roseman. It's not going to bode well for Doug Peterson. It's not going to bode well for a whole lot of people. Because when these moves were made, Jeffrey Lurie, the owner of the Philadelphia Eagles, pretty much said that now everyone's accountable. Everyone's going to be held accountable for the draft picks that are made, so on and so forth. So I don't feel in any way that it really makes that much of a difference because, you know, hey, Carson is their guy. He's going to be their guy.
Yeah. I mean, no, he shouldn't feel slighted at all. You're talking about Carson Wentz. I mean, like you said, he has the contract. You're the starter. And Whitlock knows how much I look at sports through the track and field lens. Hey, man, when you're in the lead, don't look backwards. All it's going to do is slow you down. If I'm Carson Wentz, I'm the starter. I have all the leverage. I have the money. I have the opportunity. This is my job that Jalen Hurts is not even here to take. But the nature of the beast is they're going to find someone always in the NFL as a backup that's cheaper and that they hope they can play up to a level, to a standard that makes this a real conversation. So if you're Carson Wentz, don't hate the player, hate the game. That's the nature of the beast. They're always trying to find your replacement, but in this situation, it's not direct. It's just to fill out the roster in case of injury.
Carson Wentz took the high road, tweeting out a welcome to Jalen Hurts. I don't buy it. If I'm Carson Wentz, I am bothered. To me, I would, hey, wasn't there an offensive lineman in the second round you could get for me? You know, I've been beat up. I think we could improve this offensive line, the running game, the pass protection. I would be bothered. Here's my little final last topic that I'm most interested in. Jalen Hurts comes to the NFL with a reputation as a leader unmatched. This guy's character, leadership abilities cannot be questioned. You cannot say that about Carson Wentz, his leadership abilities, quality, how he's seen inside a locker room. Could Jalen Hurts' arrival, Seth, inadvertently further undermine Carson Wentz as a leader in Philadelphia?
No, I don't think so, because I think when you go back to the second half of last year, there were certain players within that locker room that had allegiances to Nick Foles. But when you move on from Nick Foles, that doesn't mean that those allegiances are broken. As you looked at the second half of the season last year, when some of those players were no longer on the field, all of a sudden you could see Carson's confidence and his leadership take on a whole new tilt. Look at all the young wide receivers that they drafted. Look at the young guy that they went and they traded for. They have set to be the unquestioned leader. And anyone who's in that locker room who doesn't buy into that, they need to be out.
Hey, look, this situation is interesting in terms of trying to put in Jalen Hurts' leadership ability into the conversation. likability in the NFL is not necessarily the decision maker, but it is the tiebreaker. So if there ever is a situation where Jalen Hurts can demonstrate ability, whether it's tremendous ability in practice or because of injury he gets in the game, then it becomes a real thing if you're looking at it from Carson Wentz's perspective. You got to remember, if you're Carson Wentz, there have been too many reports that you don't touch all four corners of that locker room for different issues. I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole, but there are enough reports where there's smoke, there's fire. So Jalen Hurts can come in with the likability, and that's something as an asset that he can use, but he can only use it if he's on the field balling, and then it will be a tiebreaker.
Yeah, I think this could inadvertently impact Carson Wentz as a leader. He's had some issues. Again, I don't think through any fault of his own, but he's a guy that hasn't fully connected inside a locker room. And Jalen Hurts, with his reputation and the kind of person I think he is, could inadvertently undermine him here. All right, we're going to keep it moving. Former NFL general manager Mark Dominick is going to join us next. We're going to talk some more about the NFL draft. The Packers didn't take a wide receiver in the deepest wide receiver draft perhaps in history. We'll get into that. Mark Dominick from his crib. Speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai.
That's my dog.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, let's head out to Nashville, Tennessee. Longtime Buccaneers employee, former general manager of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Mark Dominick, joining us from his crib. Let's talk some more about this NFL draft. And perhaps the oddest choice, or the choice that has gotten the most criticism, the Green Bay Packers not only trade up to get Jordan Love in the first round, they go the entire NFL draft without taking a wide receiver, providing Aaron Rodgers perhaps the receiving target he needs to make sure he holds off Jordan Love. You think the Packers, and to me, what this sets up is the possibility of the Packers moving on from Aaron Rodgers. Do you think it's a possibility that within the next year, Mark, the Packers trade Aaron Rodgers?
You know, Jason, I don't think there's any chance they'll trade Aaron Rodgers over the next year. Not at all. I think, but the thing that you talked about there is the thing that set me off. Like, I understand, like, the Green Bay Packers like Jordan Love, much like they liked Aaron Rodgers. What I don't understand is, why would Green Bay give up a fourth to go get him? I get the fact, if he comes to you and you take him, you can go to the press conference and say, look, too good, we had to take him on the board. When you trade up to get him, you're signaling what you're saying, Jason. Hey, we're going to change our quarterback here somewhere in the near future. So to me, this was a shock that they would actually give up the fourth to go get him, because I think if they could have just sat there and waited for him and Jordan Love falls to him, it's a lot different conversation for everybody, whether that's Aaron Rodgers, whether it's the coaching staff, whether that's Brian Gutekunst, whether it's the players. So all that's a lot different. In addition, I was surprised they didn't go get that wide receiver, because in the second round, Denzel Mims, we all saw him dropping. And I thought there was a chance for the Packers to go pop somebody right next to them and just say, I've got another starting wide receiver next to Davante Adams. I'd be a lot better off.
They're not trading Aaron Rodgers. They're going to let this play itself out, and it's going to play itself out for years. I give this timetable for Jordan Love 5 to 7 years because of how cost-effective he is by being a first-rounder. Let's talk about the numbers and the situation, which is different than Aaron Rodgers supplanting a Brett Favre. Aaron Rodgers was projected to be the number one overall pick, failed at 24, and had to wait 3 years to supplant Brett Favre. Now, Jordan Love is not projected in anyone's mind to be as great as Aaron Rodgers, and he didn't have as much of a fall. But when you see him at 26, the reason why you go get him is because how cheap he will be for you for at least 5 years, and maybe 7 years if he plays himself into a franchise tag. Here's the actual counter to this. If you want to look at what happened last year, Montez Sweat was picked 26 in the draft and had a 4-year, $11 million deal. Basically, Green Bay just said, we're going to have a supreme backup who we're going to groom into an Aaron Rodgers position, and it's going to take 5 years potentially to do it. Aaron Rodgers is safe, secure. Jordan Love will not see the field for years to go, just like Aaron Rodgers didn't see the field. And they did it all for only $11 million. Amazing.
I listened to both of y'all, and it, to me, it sounds like y'all arguing why I think he can get traded within the next calendar year or 12 months from now at some point, because they went out and traded up for Jordan Love. That, to me, speaks to how invested they are in him. That surely had to bother Aaron Rodgers. Then you come back and you don't get Aaron Rodgers any weapons? That has to bother Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is very capable, if this year doesn't go well or how he feels it should go, he's very capable of telling the Packers, I want out of here. I want to go play someplace else. That, to me, is... And then, as it relates to Jordan Love, the blueprint from Patrick Mahomes to what Baltimore's done with Lamar Jackson to what Seattle accomplished with Russell Wilson. The blueprint, Marcellus, is to take a rookie quarterback on his rookie deal, build out the rest of your team. That's when you try to win with a young guy, not 5 years down the road when you got a pain. To me, it's all a perfect setup for them to trade Aaron Rodgers and for Aaron Rodgers to potentially want out of Green Bay. Mark, first crack at the rebuttal. Be quick here.
Yeah, no, I disagree to some extent. Look, and what I disagree about is I think you're going to play Aaron Rodgers because you've got to win a championship. That's the whole goal for everybody there. And in the next 2 years, if Coach LaFleur doesn't take that team to the postseason deeper or does something that doesn't go on, he's got a trouble. So does Brian Gutekunst. Look, here's what I think. You cannot play Jordan Love for 1 year or 2 years. And look, the Packers are going to beat people bad enough this year still, I think, where Jordan Love's going to go on the football field. The difference is, yeah, Aaron may sulk, and that's who he's going to be in terms of being frustrated with his role. But he's going to want to prove it. He's going to want to stick it to the Packers, just like he wanted to stick it to everybody that passed on him now. He's like, okay, you don't think I can play? I think this actually motivates Aaron Rodgers to sit there and go, I'm never letting this rookie ever get on the field. And in 4 or 5 years from now, you're never going to know, so you're going to just waste this pick. I bet you that's Aaron Rodgers' mentality.
Oh, man, you got to do your homework on this one, big dog. Look just no farther than Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers was drafted in 2005. Brett Favre had his worst year in 2005. They were looking like, wait, we got this guy at 24, Aaron Rodgers, who just got drafted here, now our great, our all-time great, had his worst year, and they still didn't put Aaron Rodgers in. He still had to wait 3 years to go in there. Brett Favre, when he finally left Green Bay, had one of his best years. They won 13 games, and guess what they said? Okay, you won't tell us what you're going to do going forward, you four-star hand. Aaron Rodgers might have sat even longer if Brett Favre just could have made up his mind. My point is this. If Brett Favre had Aaron Rodgers on the bench for 3 years, trust me, Aaron Rodgers is going to have Jordan Love on the bench for 3 years, if not more.
I agree with that.
Here's the difference. Here's the difference. And we'll cut one of these other topics to make room for this, because we don't have to leave here. The difference is, this is a different regime. Matt LaFleur is not attached to Aaron Rodgers. Neither is the general manager. He's not attached to Aaron Rodgers. They can move on from him. This is a different NFL than 2005. There weren't the rookie wage scale, if my memory serves me correct, wasn't in place in 2005 the way it is now. And so the whole business model for the NFL and what you try to accomplish on a rookie quarterback's contract is completely different. Because the worst case scenario is you're the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott's played these 4 or 5 years and you haven't gotten what you wanted out of it, and now you got to overpay him. You need that rookie out there performing like Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, like Patrick Mahomes, where you can build pieces all around him, win you a Super Bowl, and then you have some wiggle room. And the other thing I just think y'all underestimate, I'm just telling you, Aaron Rodgers has been running out there playing with talent not befitting his talent. No different than Tom Brady, and I think part of the reason why Tom Brady got up out of New England. These guys, particularly at their age, they want to play with great skilled players. They don't want a conversation being had about have their skills diminished or are they too old when they're not out there playing with great players around him. Aaron Rodgers has every reason to be upset and to be like, damn, I'm sitting here playing in Green Bay. Let me go play for the LA Chargers or some other better city, someplace better than Green Bay that can surround me with the proper talent.
Well, I mean, I look at this. Look, the Green Bay Packers addressed the running back position. They got Dillon. They got Jones. They like that. Sternberger's coming back at tight end, who is really an underrated tight end we didn't get to see last year. So I think there's some things. Alan Lazard was a guy that I think kind of stepped up in his role. And, yeah, he had opportunities down the stretch and took advantage of them. But I look at Aaron Rodgers and I just say, look, could he stand up and say, I'm going to take my ball and go home, trade me, get me out of here? Sure. Does he have the ability to do that? Yes. And do I agree with you? The fact that it's a different regime, yes. Are you ready to 100% turn the ball to Jordan Love and just say, let's see what happens? I don't think they are. I don't think they got the guts to do that in Green Bay right now. And the difference is, you know, the Patrick Mahomes, the Lamar Jacksons, they played in their rookie year, and at least you get a glimpse. Aaron Rodgers, do I think he'll play a little bit this year? I said Jordan Love will have a chance to play. It's going to be a very short offseason, if any. That's a big difference in terms of like the rookie mini camps and all this kind of time to get ready. I just don't think you can think about this in the next 12 months. I think this is at least 2 to 3 years out where you get Jordan Love in your offseason program for an entire year. And you want to see him around your players to see how good of a leader is he really? Because that's really what they're saying. They don't like Aaron Rodgers, the leader, because you can't not like anything else about Aaron Rodgers. So now is Jordan Love going to be better? You got to see it in person.
All right, let's keep moving here. Another interesting decision. Jameis Winston chooses the New Orleans Saints, and according to reports, had a better offer from the Pittsburgh Steelers, but Jameis preferred working with Drew Brees and Sean Payton. Was this a no-brainer decision for Jameis Winston to take less money and go play with Drew Brees and Sean Payton? No-brainer decision?
No, it wasn't a no-brainer decision. It was really close. Obviously, the blueprint of Teddy Bridgewater was easy. Having known and worked with Mike Tomlin for so many years, that's a coach you do want to be around in terms of molding you. So that part, I think, is the only difficult part. The skill set, knowing the South, knowing Sean Payton, Michael Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, Jared Cook, Alvin Kamara. Yeah, and here's the other thing. I'd sit there and say, just like we talked about Jordan Love, the good news for them are the Saints are good enough where Drew Brees is going to wipe some people out. They're going to beat somebody 45-14, and Jameis Winston is going to play a quarter and a half and show everybody that what I still believe, even though I wasn't the GM when Jameis Winston got drafted, I think Jameis Winston's going to get another shot to be a starter. And he saw this is not only just the opportunity to go learn under some coaches, but what if they won a championship? What if Drew Brees says, I'm out? Then he's got a chance to jump in there and maybe be the starter next year.
Yeah, for me, it's a no-brainer. And I'm glad that LASIK surgery is working because he can see clearly right now. And I think what we're looking at, people are looking at the wrong things and saying, why did Jameis go to New Orleans? It's not because Teddy Bridgewater went to Carolina and got paid $63 million. It's because the same Teddy Bridgewater last offseason had multiple offers and opportunities to be a starter, despite only playing one game and losing that game and not playing that well in that game. What does that mean? If you're Jameis Winston, walk into the New Orleans Saints locker room, just like Teddy Bridgewater did a couple years ago. Teddy Bridgewater had injury concerns, and he even had concerns in terms of his ability. Would he pan out? He plays one game, and already everyone wants to offer him an opportunity. So Jameis is thinking like, wait a minute, what is the risk here? If Teddy was able to translate one suspect game into an opportunity, even if I don't play, just the glow, just whatever it comes from being a New Orleans Saints quarterback is going to get me back on the market in an attractive way. I'm glad he was able to dive into that detail. Not the success of Teddy Bridgewater leaving, but the fact that even in normal performance, he still had opportunities.
I don't see this as a no-brainer decision. I think there's a way to argue that this isn't the greatest look for Jameis Winston. And that's not me arguing that, because for me, Jameis showing some maturity and being a bit more patient probably is a good look. But someone may look at it and say, is he the ultimate competitor? There's a better chance to me of him playing in Pittsburgh. Ben Roethlisberger didn't play all last year, elbow injury, he's old, he gets hit a lot. You go to New Orleans, they've already paid Taysom Hill to be the backup to Drew Brees. He's going to be in a fight to be the number two quarterback. They're financially invested in Taysom Hill. Drew Brees, obviously a Hall of Famer. He's not coming out unless there's some sort of injury. But then who comes in if he does get hurt? If I'm a competitor, Pittsburgh was a better choice. All right, we got to keep it moving. Last Chance, or not Last Chance, The Last Dance documentary. Episodes 3 and 4 aired last night on ESPN, and they were absolutely terrific. We're going to be joined by former Chicago Bull great B.J. Armstrong, who was on the first three championship teams with Michael Jordan and the Bulls. More Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley on a wonderful Monday afternoon. All right, let's move out to B.J. Armstrong's crib here in L.A. B.J., former Chicago Bull, like the rest of us, watching ESPN's Last Dance documentary about the final Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman-led season of the championship Bulls in 1997-98. Last night, they covered some interesting ground. The documentary, a bit more appreciative of Jerry Krause, spent some time focusing in on Dennis Rodman and his role with the Chicago Bulls, and, of course, kept his focus on Michael Jordan and how he manipulated and ran the team. Who did you gain the most respect for last night, Marcellus? Michael Jordan, Jerry Krause, or Dennis Rodman?
By default, I'm going to go with Jerry Krause. If you look at Krause and what he was depicted in episodes 1 and 2 versus 3 and 4, you saw the likability come in. You saw some scenes where he was a part of the group. Beyond the roster construction, which you have to give him credit for, regardless if you like him or not, seeing him dance with Scottie Pippen, okay. All right, so it wasn't always feuding times. There's a thin line between love and hate. And basically, you cross the line when you don't do for me and take care of me. I understand where you're coming from, Pippen, but y'all used to be boys, it looked like, for a second there. So if you look at Michael Jordan, you can't have more respect for Michael Jordan because you already knew what it took for him to be great. Insane mentality, great ability, and a killer instinct. And then he got put into a great situation talking about Coach Phil Jackson and Scottie Pippen and his emergence. You can't really get anything profound from Dennis Rodman. You knew that Dennis Rodman, no matter how wild he wasn't just rolling out of the bed or from the club and going straight on the court. He put in his work. He studied the game. You knew he was a great teammate. So I just actually saw the gain in respect go towards Jerry Krause and how he looked different between the two episodes.
You know, I think those were all great points, but I think who really benefited from this most is the game of basketball itself. And as you mentioned earlier, Jerry Krause was the only one in the organization who ever said no to Michael Jordan. And I think it was in episodes 1 and 2 where, you know, Michael Jordan's dad said, if you want to get the best out of my son, just tell him he can't do something. So make no doubt about that with Jerry and what Jerry was able to accomplish. Michael Jordan benefited, and I thought he showed great leadership when they could have sent anyone to Dennis Rodman's home to get Dennis Rodman. They could have sent an assistant general manager, a coach, a former teammate. Michael Jordan himself went to Dennis Rodman's home to get Dennis Rodman because the game needed Dennis Rodman, and they all needed him at that particular time. And I want to make this I want to point this out. When you look at the logo, under the logo, it says NBA Entertainment. Dennis read the little fine print, and he was part of the show. Dennis was an incredible basketball player. He was a very smart basketball player. But make no doubt about it, he was part of the entertainment package that allowed the game to get off of the sports page. You were talking about Dennis in lifestyle. You were talking about him in entertainment. And he moved the game forward with the personalities. The hair and all those things were just a distraction. But make no doubt about it that all three of those men that you just, you know, mentioned here, Michael, Jerry, and Dennis, the game benefited because of it, because we got the best out of everyone, which we saw a franchise win 6 championships in 8 years.
It's got to be Jerry Krause. Big win for him last night. I couldn't stand him in the first 2 episodes. clearly showed his genius in episodes 3 and 4. The guy made some great decisions, obviously with Tex Winter, siding with Tex Winter over Doug Collins, the drafting of Dennis Rodman and putting that team together. You got to give Jerry Krause a lot of credit. All right, the other big deal last night was they went into a little bit more detail on the feud between Isaiah Thomas's Bad Boy Detroit Pistons and Michael Jordan's Chicago Bulls. Michael Jordan took some shots at Isaiah Thomas, called him an a-hole last night on television, all over this lack of a handshake in 1991 when the Pistons left the court early. Whose side you on, Marcellus? Isaiah or Michael Jordan?
Crazy enough, they both were right. But if you're going to make me sit in this courtroom and slam down my gavel and give you a verdict, I'm siding with Isaiah Thomas because he actually got caught up in a cultural shift from the way it used to be and the way it should be. Let me explain. This all started when the Boston Celtics finally lost to the Detroit Pistons and they walked off the court. We actually got to see the video of that. And Isaiah was like, oh, so when you beat the best, they don't hand you the baton. They just throw it on the ground. You got to pick it up. No sportsmanship. Okay. So when Jordan finally beat Isaiah, they had learned conditioned behavior of, we going to do the same thing that was done to us. This is how we were raised in the game. No disrespect to them, but respect to the way the game is played. But then Jordan, in his explanation, tried to come back and say, no, no, no. When we lost to them, lost is the key word. When we lost to them, we went out there and was shaking their hands. Yeah, you should shake my hand, you loser. And he tried to insert that as the actual example of why Isaiah was wrong. Hey, case dismissed. Isaiah, take your money and go, man.
Well, you know what? I'm going to try to act my age here and really be 52. But I'm going to go back in time, if you will, and really try to expand what was going on. We understood exactly what the Pistons were doing. We understood the mental warfare of why the Pistons were doing what they were doing. And you're exactly right. No one was going to hand you anything. You had to go there and take it. But in saying that, the one thing that I think needs to be expressed is that we had to understand that there was a responsibility that was bigger than all of us. And we had to show some type of, you know, example to the kids who were watching the game. The camera didn't pick that up.
Oh,
the camera,
God.
When they were watching, when they were walking off the court, it was just bad. It was just bad, no matter how you slice it, how you can look at it and what you can say. And I think that was the one thing that we were very aware of as players in the game. We knew what they were trying to do. We knew what they were trying to say. But I'm going to tell you what, when they walked off the court, the camera picked up and saw something entirely differently because it was a game within the game. And no one else knew what was going on other than the players who were actually playing. And I think that's what we're still talking about some 30 years later.
Look, that era of the NBA was as physical and as intense. The rivalries were personal. I'm clearly on Isaiah's side on this. Isaiah's a very good friend of mine. Isaiah's one of the most misunderstood athletes that I've ever seen in professional sports. Obviously love and respect what Michael Jordan accomplished in his NBA career, but I wish he would let this go. The Bad Yes. Boy Pistons figured out a way to beat up Michael Jordan and the Bulls and steal two titles. Rather than look at them like they're beneath us, they're not the sportsmen that we were. No, Isaiah Thomas was a little dude, 6'1", played with a chip on his shoulder, and built a team to play with a chip on the shoulder. Wasn't as talented as Chicago Bulls. Figured out a way to beat them up and win two titles. Hats off. It made Michael Jordan even greater. It makes his story even greater. Michael needs to show Isaiah some respect. Kept him off the dream team. It's the only thing I can really criticize Michael about is the way he's mistreated Isaiah Thomas for the last 30 years. All right, we got to keep it moving. LeVar Arrington's going to join us. We're going to have the most fearless discussion in sports. The Patriots drafted a kicker, Justin Rohrwasser, who's taken a lot of heat for a tattoo that some people think is controversial. He's having it removed. We'll tell you what we think about it. Speak for yourself. Presented by Hyundai, more after this. All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, let's move out to LeVar Arrington's crib in Pasadena for the most fearless conversation of the day. The New England Patriots, on day three of the NFL draft, selected a kicker, Justin Rohrwasser, who has a three percenter tattoo on his left elbow. Rohrwasser said he got the tattoo when he was young and that he's going to have the tattoo covered up. Three percenters are a group that is pro-guns, critical of our government. Some people claim they are racist, but I did a lot of research on this. Couldn't find that. They are very conservative and considered right-wing. We've had some people call or insinuate that Rohrwasser is racist, including Jemele Hill on Twitter. Is this tattoo a big deal, little deal, or no deal, Marcellus?
It's a little deal that could be a big deal. And I say it's a little deal right now because he feels that he needs to take it off. And there's an explanation and a reason why he's feeling like he needs to take it off. It's not just public pressure. It's not just job security. There's another reason why you would go and take it off versus go to bat for this if it's all with pure intentions, this tattoo. Now, it could be a big deal if you actually got the tattoo and you knew why you did it and you're lying about that. But we're not at that place right now. Like you said, I did a lot of research on this as well. Conservative, conservative, conservative. Yes, yes, yes. But racist, we're doing a lot if we want to take that step or that leap. And I'll give you this example. It's not apples to oranges, but in terms of the difference, but I want to explain this. I grew up in L.A., Compton, had uncles, original gangsters, not just a term thrown out. It's like, oh, you're older than me in the gang, like original gang members who started gangbanging because they wanted protection and community activism. Then it morphed into something else. And because they weren't purely mapped onto all of the attributes of that group, they had a decision to make. All I'm saying is this group could morph into something different than what you originally believe in concept. Did the kid get caught up in that? Or is the kid lying and saying, no, I wanted to ride the entire wave of what this became? We don't know that answer. So right now, for me, it's a little deal just because he's giving it up and taking it off.
Yeah, I'm going to go no deal. And the reason why I go no deal with this is if he truly was a radical and his belief connected to what it possibly could mean to be within that group, you're not going to sacrifice that and get it covered up and jump out and get ahead of it and basically distance yourself away from what this could possibly mean. So that's my first point. But then to address what you were saying about your uncles, I'm not from South Central. I'm not from Compton, but I am from a place called Pittsburgh, and they gangbang pretty hard there too. And I have a whole lot of family members that are connected within that following as well. I'll say this. We're opening Pandora's box by singling this dude out and saying, look at his tattoo. If you've been in a locker room before, if we're taking inventory on what tattoos are on people's bodies and what they mean, how many fines are we going to get that say this means this or this tattoo means that or that tattoo meant this? All right. So to me, I'm trying to figure out why are we singling out this young fella to begin with? If there was content that surfaced that said that there was a problem that surfaced with him doing something that was directly offensive, divisive, something that would really be looked at as being racist or any type of setup in that way, then now it becomes a deal. But to see a picture of his forearms and to now single him out, tell me the top three guys, top five guys in the NFL that have a ton of tattoos on them. Tell me you know that every tattoo they have and what those tattoos mean and what they stand for. I would challenge you on that.
Yeah, I think that we have a lot of professional athletes. A lot may be a strong word, but we have several with gang affiliations. And some of them are proud of their gang affiliation. And I think that in terms of action, some of the gang affiliations perhaps more reprehensible than anything I could find about the three percenters. I want to go a step further, though, and just talk a little bit about myself in terms of when you're a young person and you're on a journey towards enlightenment and knowledge and trying to figure out your beliefs, you can end up in some places that are a little darker than what you realize, and you won't realize this until later in life. And I say that because as a college athlete at Ball State, there's not a friend of mine that didn't know I got Louis Farrakhan tape shipped to me on a monthly basis. Me and my friends went to Chicago for Savior's Day regularly in support of Louis Farrakhan. We were first in line at the Million Man March. That's not a representation of who I am today or who I later continue to be on my journey of trying to understand and figure out what I thought about America and my place in it. Young people will go on a journey that takes them some different places. And I think we need to give this kid the opportunity, the same one I got, to make some mistakes on this journey. The other part I'll add is just when you go to hip hop, there's a thing called five percenters. And if you understand hip hop and its influence out of New York and the 5% movement out of New York, it's a spinoff of the Nation of Islam and Eric B. and Rakim, Big Daddy Kane, legends in the hip hop industry. But everybody out of New York rap has been influenced by the five percenters. They believe the white people are the devil, black people are gods. It is clearly a supremacist mentality from the five percenters. We allow all of this, but this kid with his tattoo and allegedly this group is anti-government or is critical of the American government, but when Colin Kaepernick is critical of the American government, we're all supposed to celebrate it, and it's the greatest thing in the world, and how dare you question him? So there's this thing, who can and can't criticize the government? Who can be in support of the Second Amendment and who can't be? This kid's being singled out. It's no deal to me. It's unfair what's happened to him. Let's see where his journey takes him. To me, he's clearly removing the tattoo because he wants to start his NFL career, doesn't want to bring that baggage into the locker room and having people ask all kinds of questions. But just like you have said, LeVar, if we're going to start asking questions about guys and their tattoos and athletes, I think about Serena Williams at the Olympics, crip walking at Wimbledon during the Olympics. I just think we're holding this kid to a standard we're not holding everybody else to.
Look, I love the nuanced discussion, and that's why this is necessary. However, here's some pushback. He knew about it before. Now, if it's harmless, then you should have a conversation with your future employers describing how harmless it is. At least go through that engagement instead of saying, I'm just going to remove it so that I can make sure that I'm not being misperceived. But you had to know that this was being misperceived before draft day. Someone had to bring this to your attention before. So that's a different conversation. I love the fact that you said during our journey in identity and discovery, we make missteps. I used to be a thief. I got caught stealing in high school, and my principal caught me, told the police she would deal with me and make sure that Marcellus was on the right track for the rest of his life. And I can testify right now I have not stolen another thing from that moment. Glad I wasn't properly condemned in that moment. I got nose pierces. I got tattoos I wish I could get removed. None of them are racist or allegedly racist, but I got one of my daughter and I got four kids. I ain't getting the rest of them, so she feel like she's special. I'm like, they all special. So the point of this is, man, you just got to ride the wave sometimes and not always come down with the strictest of judgment.
All right, we got to keep it moving. Uncle Jimmy's next. We got an approval rating for Jalen Hurts of the Philadelphia Eagles. Speak for yourself from the crib. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, time to roll out to Uncle Jimmy's crib. You got a big dummy of the day?
No.
I sure as hell do. Hey, man, big dummy of the day goes to the person that
wants to admit that it's their birthday, but still wants to try to not admit that that's not their real hair. Come on, man. At some point or another, you got to give one of them up, man. Wow. We know how old you are, man. Birthday. That's not your hair, and that's
don't
not your hair
color. Don't be jealous about this hair.
Come on, man.
Don't be jealous about my hair. You got any thoughts on Jalen Hurts?
Hey, man, look here. Let me tell you this.
Yeah.
What's your boy's name? Carson Wentz and the city of Philadelphia. Carson Wentz will never get the brotherly love that, what's his name? Randall Cunningham, Donovan McNabb, or, no, he ain't going to get none of that brotherly love. Okay?
Nick.
And as far as Nick Foles goes, hey, that's why they called him Big Nick Foles. He can't compete, man. Come on. Come on, man.
So just right. Go with the brother, huh?
Internet has been scouting Marcellus and I a bit higher.
I guess that's
all right, we'll see you tomorrow.
Did you hear our last topic?